is the start of Monday today being the start of Eating Disorders Awareness Week. So we're going to be talking about that now. And joining me in the studio to tell us about this and some of the events taking place and just to talk around the issue of eating disorders is Caroline O'Donovan. Caroline, it's great to have you in the studio with me today. Good morning. Let's try that again.
Okay.
There we go. Technical difficulties. Caroline, you've had a very busy morning already.
I've just come straight from the Cork City Library, where the Lord Mayor has launched our Eating Disorder Awareness Week there. And there's also a stand in the City Library if anybody wants to go see and get more information on eating disorders and this week.
I was going to say that will be up there this week.
It'll be up all this week.
Okay, yes. Very good. So it's been launched and it is a week. You know, sometimes there's World Awareness Day or there's this or there's Anti-Bullying Month.
Yeah.
But here we have a week of bringing awareness to eating disorders. Why is this so important to take a week to do this?
Okay. There's a lot of myths, really, Terry, about eating disorders. And I don't know if people know that, eating disorders is the highest killer in the psychiatric system at the moment. That there's the highest amount of deaths with eating disorders. So that's not very much known. So I think it's important to be able to get that across to people. Because so many people suffer with eating disorders in Cork. And it can be a very secretive illness but a very serious illness. So we just want to try and break a few myths around that and to express our concern about people who are suffering.
And what would be some of the main myths? Because I think we do have stereotypes about any sort of issues, and there's mental health issues as well as physical health issues with eating disorders. But what would be some of the main myths that would be out there?
One of them maybe that, girls do this consciously, really, isn't it? Or purposely, that they just want to be thin. So it's just about that it's all about just being thin and nothing else, where it's far deeper than that. It goes very deep into psychological and self-esteem and body image, can be quite serious. The other maybe that guys don't get eating disorders, which they do. And older people now, it's becoming more and more apparent that older women are getting eating disorders.
I saw that actually in the Irish Examiner. There was a story about there is a surge in older people, if you will, women and men, I suppose, reaching out for help. Do you think part of that, Caroline, is because it's getting more comfortable for people to share issues such as this?
Yeah, I think an awful lot of the stigma, and that's hence having Eating Disorder Awareness Week, that's beginning to be lifted, and they can see it as it's a mental condition. As I said, it's not something that people consciously are doing or doing for the fun of it, quite the exact opposite, really. So it's becoming maybe a bit easier to talk about it and to get help, to go to the doctor and to try and get help for it.
I think as well, social media is becoming such a huge issue in relation to eating disorders. Unfortunately, on the internet, you can find too much information about eating disorders. Yeah. You can hear about some of the very, very sad stories, but that you don't see the other side always. So it's important to make sure that if you're looking for information about anything, to make sure it's a reliable source, make sure that it's balanced, and to make sure that it brings you to the point to get help. Because I think sometimes, as you said, it's very secretive and it can stay very hidden.
Yes, yeah, that can be a lot of the problem. And there's so many sites out there that would be maybe pro eating disorders, so they would encourage girls and women to continue to diet or give them tips how to do it. So that can be quite serious too. And to make sure, really the first port of call would be your GP. And we are doing a pilot study at the moment in conjunction with UCC to educate doctors or to be able to inform them and see how much they know about eating disorders. So that's ongoing.
That's important as well. I mean, the GP is the first port of call for so many things, and they're actually required to know so much. And sometimes they don't always have the full information about some of these issues.
Yeah, yes, that unfortunately is the case. Now, lots of them, more and more, are beginning to understand just how serious it is. And they do refer on, either to us or to other significant people. But yes, the more that they can understand that it's not just a phase that someone's going through, or to really look for the signs and symptoms that are going on, to ask questions, the relevant questions, so that they know that it is more serious than maybe someone on a diet. Yeah, that it is much more serious than that.
Well, we'll talk about maybe some of the signs and symptoms in a few moments, but let's talk about, I suppose, the various eating disorders, some of the medical and psychological issues surrounding it, because we hear anorexia, but there are many, many more, I suppose, eating disorders that are being identified, combinations of things. So tell us, I suppose, some of the main taglines, if you will, of eating disorders.
Okay. Well, the main ones that we would be working with at the moment in the centre would be anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. Otherwise, it can be as comfort eating too. So anorexia, which is widely known, as you know, which is a very restrictive in food, compulsive exercising, be secret about food, becomes very ritualistic with the person at home, can be very difficult because the person can be very much in denial about their body size. So they don't see what we see when the weight is falling off. That's anorexia. Bulimia then can be where a person is maybe restricting and then binging and then purging food after binging. So they're caught in a cycle of wanting to be thinner and seriously concerned about their body image, but getting caught up then in the food or using food as a comfort too, but then binging and purging the food afterwards. And then it continuing the cycle then, want to restrict again next day. And
there's so much, I think, going on mentally there, just thinking about that and the guilt. I can well imagine there's guilt involved and, I've eaten this and I shouldn't have eaten. And then they purge, but they know that that's not healthy either. And then so I can imagine the cycle that goes on.
And an awful lot of self-hatred builds up because I believe that they have no self-control or they can't stop this or they should be able to stop it. So again, the secretive, the secrecy, the shame, they believe they have no willpower to be able to stop this, but yet, you know, it's at this stage well out of their hands to be able to stop it. It isn't quite a serious medical condition. So, but if they think it's themselves that are causing this or doing this or perpetuating all the time and keeping it going, then it's very difficult for them. It needs professional help.
Talk about comfort eating as well. And I'm thinking as well about the society that we live in, and being weight conscious is so important. And there's talk of obesity as a medical condition, but yet there is an eating disorder element into comfort eating.
Yes, there is. Comfort eating or binge eating, as we call it too, can be very much done as someone just either becomes that they might eat a trigger food and have something that they get caught up in and would eat that and then are not able to stop eating it, so would continue eating. But the difference is that they don't purge the food afterwards. It's kind of like, I suppose, the hole in the soul, really, that they're trying to fill some of the thing through food. And it's a comfort to them. It becomes a kind of a habit, but I don't want to use that word loosely. It's a comfort, and very difficult to stop again, very difficult to not eat the foods and to find ways of being able to mind themselves or soothe themselves outside of food.
So it's really looking at the underlying mental health condition that is triggering this physical expression, really. So what's happening on the outside, from what I hear you saying, is a symptom of the deeper issues going on inside.
Always, really, with all three conditions, really, it's all we find that there's always low self-esteem, very low, not even self-esteem, because I think we all struggle with self-esteem at some level.
Yeah.
I mean, that term can be used loosely. But self-worth. It's a very, very low feeling of self-worth and disgust and hatred towards themselves. So the hatred builds and builds as the condition goes on and on. But it can be done so secretively, you know, that on the outside they could look quite well and connect with people at some level. But underneath all this can be going on, which is, it's horrendous, really.
So Caroline, tell me, I suppose, when I'm thinking about puberty and kids start to become adults, their bodies are changing. Girls and boys, they don't know what's happening. I can imagine that is a difficult time where maybe something happens inside and to say, I don't like what's happening, or maybe they haven't even been properly informed as to why their bodies are changing. Would that be one sort of trigger point for people?
That coupled with low self-esteem, and we find that bullying can come into it a lot too, maybe in childhood or around that age where people were bullied or comments were made, maybe about the weight, if they were slightly overweight when they were younger, that can also be a huge trigger for them to start losing weight then. And again, not having the self-esteem or self-worth or even tools to how to manage their thinking around that can be very, very difficult for them. So they tend to then maybe, with anorexia especially, and maybe in bulimia, that they start using exercise as a way and they start losing weight. And then all of a sudden get attention and people start, you know, commenting on how good they look. And then that can keep going where it becomes a point of none.
that they can't stop then. It just keeps going and going. So that time of adolescence can be a trigger, you're saying, bullying as well, other issues. Would there be other life stages that might put someone into a frame of mind that they could go down this route into an eating disorder?
Mm-hmm. Generally, I find that it would be, you know, that like changing from childhood to adolescent can be very challenging for all of us, really. It has been, and for anyone starting that. So the challenges of maybe growing up, of facing growing up, we find that there's an awful lot of overwhelm, that the girls feel very overwhelmed when they come in, that facing anything like exams or social media, you know, facing them friends and keeping with peers and trying to keep up with peers, that it's because of there's a predisposition to a very sensitive personality. So whereas their friends might be able to cope much easier with maybe going out and meeting friends or going facing junior cert or leaving cert, that they would struggle much more with that. And the sensitive personality coupled with maybe perfectionism, sometimes wanting to get it right and pleasing others, that mixture then tends to be overwhelming for them. And the eating disorder comes in as a way of coping. So it's almost like another part of them takes over and says, I'll show you how to cope. This is how you do it. And it becomes very effective because it does work, unfortunately.
Talk to me about sensitive personality. What do you mean by that?
We found by working with the girls and guys that there seems to be a certain few traits that they all seem to have, and one of those is extremely sensitive personality. As I said, you know, that they would maybe their brothers, sisters or friends would be able to roll with the punches as such easier than what they would. They would be very creative too. So there'd be huge creativity, very good artists or musicians. They tend to have that kind of almost special part of them, really. They'd also be very concerned about others. So again, that perfection of getting things right and wanting to please, that's very much part of their personalities. So that tends to be there.
That I'm just thinking about an average normal family. And if you have a sensitive personality and the average normal family is making jokes and, you know, a bit of fun at each other. And that one particular then sensitive personality is maybe taking things to heart, not saying, that hurts my feelings. They may not have the words to say that. And it can draw them within. Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Where we would say, this is normal. But the sensitive personality would be saying, I actually can't handle what you're giving me.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they're overwhelmed then. So it all goes underground a bit. Yeah, because they don't feel they have the right, or they don't have the words or the expression to be able to talk about it. So it goes underground and it becomes completely overwhelming. So then, as we call it, the ED voice comes in to say, I'll show you how to cope. I'll show you how to lead you through your teenage years or whatever, or Friday night or whatever it would be. So that, yeah.
I think that's a very good point for parents, mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers to know that and to be looking for it, because if you don't know that child is going through that, you can just continue on in the same parenting behavior that you have your whole life, and you don't realize that maybe you're contributing. So education really is part of the key as to how to help to raise healthy teens, to help them, but also to help ourselves as parents as well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there's a book out called Extra Sensitive Children. So, you know, Extra Sensitive Persons, I think it's called. But it's, you know, it's very much on that, based on that you could have a set of twins and one of them could be quite kind of maybe robust, we'll use that word, and the other one could be extremely sensitive. And it's just recognising, as you said, Terry, that one of them and that child might need a little bit more listening to and a bit more honouring where they're at, rather than thinking they're all raised the same and they should be fine, isn't it? Yeah. So parents, coming, we have a carers group. We've set that up. The need, I think, for the centre, we realise that the more parents that are involved, the teenagers seem to get better quicker, maybe in some occasions. So we have a carers group at the moment. We have one on four consecutive weeks, and that's an intensive carers program, educational program, and then we have a support group on the first Monday of each month. And that's just to get support, that the parents themselves support each other, and they get information too on that night. And it's open to everyone, parents, grandparents, husbands or wives, whichever, or and siblings.
Okay.
So it's just, yeah, education we find is knowledge is power. So the more knowledge we have, the more we can help not to get caught up in the eating disorder, because the eating disorder gets into such a state of, needing to control and have things, that if the family tend to go along with that, or they might bang up against it, then it causes an awful lot of conflict. And it's very difficult to do, but it can be quite difficult then.
Well, when you think of an eating disorder as well, we need to eat to live.
Yes.
Whereas if you think of someone, and not diminishing any other sort of a struggle, but I'm thinking of alcohol
Aye.
addiction, or I'm thinking of different things where there are actually chemical changes in the brain, and it's hard to break this, but you don't need alcohol to live, but you need food to live.
Yes.
So I think that's a complication in an eating disorder, is to separate nutrition, health, well-being. It's all tied up.
It is very much, yeah, and that's why it's so difficult to heal, I suppose, really, and for recovery, because people find that, and maybe things like addiction centres, while they will work with some people with eating disorders, it is more difficult. That is, the specialised treatment is needed. I think the relationship is an awful lot for the trust to come away from the eating disorder, as you were saying earlier on. That actually letting go of the eating disorder can be difficult, but the trust and having faith in other human beings tends to allow them to say, okay, it is okay to letting go bits and bits of it, and to get to know themselves. We walk again with the whole thing of that they maybe have covered up an awful lot of that sensitive self. Because it wasn't safe for whatever reasons to be able to express that. So it's letting go of the eating disorder, so this person, this yeah, that they've buried, really can become more and stronger, and they can operate from that place rather than the eating disorder.
I'd like to talk a little bit about carers, people who maybe are in these situations, but it's possible that people might have questions. They may say, I'm not quite sure if my child or my teen is suffering with an eating disorder. I'm afraid to ask them because I don't want them to get the idea of it just from me asking. It's maybe relationships are a bit fragile at the minute. So what are some of the signs and symptoms that people would be looking for if they're concerned about a loved one?
Some would be with anorexia, it would be that they're beginning to skip meals. I think first what happens is maybe the diet kicks in. So the diet would be maybe I don't eat fats anymore. I don't eat butter. I don't eat fat foods. And then I don't eat other what they might put it as bad foods. So there's good food and bad foods, and that begins to stretch out more and more. Then they might cut out sugar, then they cut out dairy. So there's things like that begin to happen more and more. Then they might say skip meals and say I've eaten earlier on, or I've eaten on the way home. So there's a lot of that starts happening. Exercise, compulsive exercise, tends to be part of it, where they feel they have to, run, jog, go to the gym. What else? And of course, the physical symptoms that they're beginning to lose weight more and more. Personality would change because they tend to get a little bit more rigid and obsessive about things, that things have to be done a certain way. And our brain needs to be fed. So if the brain is not being fed, then that can be, that the rigidness seems to kick in more and more.
What about some of the challenges in comfort eating, if you will? Because there's actually a cost to that if you
Yes.
think about that. So talk a little bit about some of the signs and symptoms around that.
Yes, and with bulimia and comfort eating, just cost, even the financial cost is huge for people. To be paying, spending a lot of money every evening on foods, on binge foods, on trigger foods, as we call them. Comfort eating, I think, tends to be a little bit more acceptable, maybe. But now that it has been, maybe attention wouldn't be drawn to it as much, maybe, as what if someone is losing weight rapidly, and yet it can be equally distressing for someone to be comfort eating, because again, it is very seriously kind of filling the hole in the soul. It's trying to fill something that they haven't gotten themselves.
That's a trick. There's a concern as well, though, because of discrimination. And we read this all over the media that people who are overweight or obese are being discriminated against. There's a health issue, there's a cost to society, but we don't know each individual person's story and the underlying, as you will, the need that is trying to be met. So that can be difficult, I think, for a loved one as well, as to say, I'm concerned about you with everything that we're seeing about quote unquote discrimination.
That's true, isn't it? Yeah, because I mean, there's a lot of judgment. There's not a lot of like TV programs, everything, you know, especially in January, are very much used for, you know, you need to lose weight, you need to. So it's very acceptable to almost nearly judge someone or point weight out to someone at this stage, isn't it? Which is, you know, very shaming for someone to be told, you know, to be pointed out to them. So that's the difficulty in actually being able to say to someone, you know, that you are concerned more for their health rather than the obesity part, that, you know, the what it does to our organs if we are carrying a lot of weight.
No, there's some very good points there. As we start to come to a close, Caroline, let's talk a little bit about the first port of call and just to give people an idea as to what the action steps would be for someone to start in their recovery.
Okay, well, for us, it would be to the GP mainly. Now, we get to other referrals. Parents would often just phone the centre, and I have the phone number here. But it would be to GP, and if they come to the centre, then there's an assessment done, an initial assessment, and then if the person is suitable to come to the for counselling to the centre, we have a team of the dietitian. They'd see the dietitian. They'd be assigned a therapist, and we, in conjunction with the doctor, the dietitian, and a therapist, we work with that person either once or sometimes twice a week, depends on the severity of their condition at the time. So first port of call is usually the doctor, from there.
And I do think that's important for our listeners to know that if they're concerned, they're hearing something today and they have questions. And would they be able to just contact your organization as well, just if they needed to bounce a few ideas or to see, do you think that my loved one is suffering? Would you be able to talk to people
Absolutely.
in that?
Yeah, absolutely. If they have concerns, they can phone the centre directly. Our telephone number is 453-9900. Okay, so they can phone the centre there, or they can look up a website. It's www.edcc.ie. So, and our Facebook page there too, we can contact that. So all the information, for carers, for people themselves, sufferers, it's all on the site, and they can have a chat with someone at the centre too.
Okay, and I suppose too, just what are some of the events that you have going on this week with Eating Disorders Awareness Week?
Okay, so the rest of what's happening this week, if we have two newspaper articles on in the Echo and the Independent, the Cork Independent. We have an interview with News Talk this afternoon, going on with Trish Shiel and Anna, one of the girls in recovery. We also have an interview with 96FM and Red FM. We have an information stand up in CIT in the main hall there, and we also have the City Hall lit up in blue in the evenings, just for support, and be able to say to people that we do understand, and for anyone who hasn't got in touch yet or who is struggling with it on their own, just say that we are there and we do understand what it's like to have an eating disorder.
Okay, Carolyn, will you give the contact details again, please?
Okay, so the contact our site is www.edcc.ie, or you can Facebook us, and also our telephone number is 453-9900.
Okay, very good. Caroline, thank you
Right.
so much for being here with me
Thank you,
today.
Terry. That's right.
We are coming up to the news at the top of the hour. Lots more on the way here on 93.1 Life FM. Somewhere to